For January 28th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 179. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer with Lullabot. With me, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Awesome. Mike's a front-ender at Lullabot. Today we're talking about a fun topic, a little bit different than we've done before.
Yep, backdrop.
And we have two of my favorite people. When you go to at least when I've been in the past to a Drupal event, these are two people that I always like to run into. I'm happy to introduce the owner and senior developer of Generation Web Development. She's the Backdrop project lead and founding forker. Has 9 years in the Drupal community. Before Backdrop, she was the Drupal 8 Twig initiative lead and is known to be a Bay Area Drupal camp, Bad Camp organizer. Hi, Jen Lampton.
Hello, how are you?
That's a mouthful, all those accolades of yours.
Sorry, okay. You can skip half of them. Doesn't sound quite so wordy.
All right. All right, time to re-record.
No.
So, secondly, this is a big surprise. This person has numerous contributions to Drupal's contrib, including flag and five star, and core, including D7 core file and image modules and D8's dialog system. Over 10 years on Drupal.org, and he is a senior architect at Lullabot with us, Nate Quicksketch-Hogg.
Whoa, dude. No.
No.
You're really bad at pronouncing names, man. Try again.
And I even sent a message to Matt, but then it was Mike doing the intro. It's Haug, man. Haug.
That's what I said, Haug. What did I say?
You said whatever.
Nate Quicksketch-Hogg.
Nate, how long have you been at Lullabot?
We're going come this September. It'll be 10 years, the decade of Lullabot.
That's amazing because Lullabot's been around like a decade. So.
Yep. Yeah, I started when I was still in college, kind of freelancing with them.
And you guys are now the known Backdrop conspirators, and it's been about a year since Backdrop was released, right?
Yeah, Backdrop 1.0 came out on January 15th a year ago, and we've been making releases and releasing software and Corey and Contrib ever since.
Before we get into Backdrop, I want to, there's an elephant in the room where we've heard through the grapevine, and by grapevine I mean Twitter, that you've been cheating on us with other podcasts.
Yeah, you know, Jen got in touch with us, and I was so excited. He was like, yes, of course. And they signed the exclusivity agreement, and then all of a sudden we hear that they're doing other podcasts.
We like podcasts. Can't we all just get along? I mean...
Yeah. So, yeah, we're just messing with you. If anybody wants to check that out, it's the Drupal Easy Podcast coming out sometime this week. Hopefully we'll beat them.
All right. So guys, if you could just start off, I guess, just by giving us a quick rundown about what Backdrop is and why you forked Drupal and made Backdrop.
Sure. So the very quick elevator pitch for Backdrop is that it's a content management system specifically for small to medium-sized businesses and nonprofits. And if you're familiar with Drupal, it's Drupal with CMI, like Drupal 7, with CMI and layouts and views and core. There's a lot of reasons why we forked it, but there's a couple of big ones. And I think maybe, Nate, you wanted to talk about the philosophical differences between Drupal and Backdrop. But the big thing for me was that my clients, I need to be able to pitch them on updates for their software. And usually you can, you know, say, well, your site was built 5 years ago and the web's changed a lot since then. And maybe your company's changed a lot since then. And let's figure out what's working and what's not working. And we'll kind of fix it up. And then as you're fixing it up, you can kind of roll in a core update, and you can sell that if it's affordable and they see the value. But if you say to them, like, this update thing I'm going to do is going to cost more than twice what you originally paid for your website, it stops being an easy sell. And I wanted to be able to, you know, continue to do good things for my clients, but feel good about it at the same time. So I was looking for a solution that had a lower cost of long-term ownership so that I can continue to keep my clients on the latest and greatest code in a way that still makes sense for their businesses and organizations.
So are you primarily targeting this toward D7 and D6 upgrades, or are you targeting new installs, or like, I mean...
Yes. I mean, obviously, we are coming from the world of being Drupal 7 and 6 developers, so that's what mm-hmm. is resonates most with us. But it's also good for new projects that have a short timeline or a small budget or an in-house staff of developers that maybe aren't super technical, and they need to be able to learn it really quickly and continue to maintain it themselves.
Gotcha. So when you... announced Backdrop, one of my favorite things about I think the whole project was that on the website it said don't panic, which, like, I'm a big fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I thought that was pretty whose idea was that?
I don't know. I mean, I that might have come from both of us. Maybe it was just Nate.
I wrote up that manifesto. There's a lot of the manifesto was it caused some issues. we weren't quite ready yet was the problem. People found our GitHub repository and they're like, oh my God. And they saw the committers, and then it blew up before we were ready to actually explain it, which might've been our fault for putting it up on GitHub in the first place. We had been writing this so-called manifesto, and then people found the repository, and then we were kind of like rushed to get it out there because at the time there was just a lot of unexplained, there was just a code repository that said it was a fork of Drupal and some changes had started happening in it. And everybody brought their own idea of what it was to the table mm-hmm. right off the bat. And that made for a lot of confusion. We got kind of upset core developers popping in thinking they're like, oh, this is great because Drupal 8 did it all wrong and we're going to change it all in a different way from what Drupal 8 did. And when we explained that we weren't really about rewriting everything in a different way, that we were actually more about maintaining what we already had and adding functionality to it instead of rewriting, then a lot of people were like, well, what the hell? I wanted to rewrite everything my way. And then they left, which was good, actually, that they, that we were able to at least explain what our goals were fairly quickly, but it wasn't quite quickly enough.
So how has your perception of the Drupal community changed after since announcing it and forking it?
And a year later.
At the time, I'll rewind a little bit and explain why my part of why we made the fork in the first place was I was working on CK Editor and Dialog stuff at the time, or I had worked on it like 3 or 4 months prior to.
You're talking about work for Drupal 8 Core, right?
Yes, for Drupal 8 Core prior to the forking. And I kind of went quiet off radar there for a little while. Because I was contemplating doing this. But the reason why that came up was in the CK Editor issue, I had written the original CK Editor module for Drupal 8. And at some point, like right before it was moving into core, it basically got rewritten for the plugin architecture. And that just totally blew my mind that it was like, that we could have code that was totally working and functioning, but then had to be entirely rewritten right before it was committed to match the new architecture of Drupal 8. And it didn't hit me the scope of changes that were in Drupal 8 until that point where it was like, oh, that code you wrote, it needs to be rewritten before it can actually be committed. And I was like, what? That's crazy. But I still managed to kind of accept that, and I kind of rolled along with it for a little while. And actually... it was actually kind of interesting because a bunch of the architects of Drupal 8 hadn't really ever had somebody try to use their system before that didn't know it. And so I was kind of this person that wasn't familiar with how, say, plugins and annotations worked. And when I came in, I was just like, this confusing is confusing, or this system is confusing as hell. We actually made a bunch of improvements to the way things worked because of my experiences having so much trouble with it, which again, kudos to the Drupal community for taking that seriously and making adjustments to try to make it easier, which they did by the time it was finally released. But the underlying thing was still there, and that was back then I saw the amount of change that was happening and the amount of effort it would take, or the amount of effort it was taking me, and the amount of effort it was going to take everybody, all of the existing Drupal developers, all of the existing Drupal sites that are out there, to accommodate that scope of change. And we saw it as we saw a need that there were people out there that were like ourselves, that were like, this is not going to be a tolerable amount of change for ourselves or for our clients that that we've sold these Drupal websites to, just because of the enormous amount of change. There's an enormous amount of cost that is affiliated with that. It takes a lot of time to do the rewriting, whether it's contrib modules or whether it's the custom modules that you've written, or if you have an existing site, the migration from your old site to the Drupal 8 site, because Drupal 8 went further than ever before with their backwards compatibility policy that they decided to drop. Previously, there were like no compatibility for code, but we promised to maintain your content like in between versions, and then that got dropped somewhere in the Drupal 8 cycle. But that actually got dropped after we forked, which was even more surprising that we kind of became even more solidified in our different paths, where Backdrop had an increasing focus on backwards compatibility after the fork, and Drupal had an increasing focus on like changes that were so drastic that compatibility was like an impossibility.
Or an impracticality.
Yeah, an impracticality, yeah.
So what were your biggest fears prior to announcing?
I mean, this is definitely a big deal. You know, when we were working on it, especially in the very beginning, there was a lot of gut checking that had to go on, where it's like every day you're like, okay, we're going to do this. And then at night you're like lying in bed going to bed going, oh my God, are we really going to do this? Why am I doing this again? What is it? You know, and you talk yourself through it and you're like, okay, yeah, okay, it's fine, I'll do it. And then the next day you'd have the same kind of thought again. And a lot of my initial concerns, I think, were also shared by other Drupal core developers, where they were worried that there might be like a huge division in the Drupal community, and that was going to be bad for Drupal. But the division that happened in the Drupal community, it has had nothing to do with Backdrop. It's the division between Drupal 7 and Drupal 8. And I feel like what we're doing now is just kind of building an option in there for the people who don't want to go down the path of Drupal 8. Now they have someplace else to go. They don't have to panic. Whereas before, the existence of Backdrop that was, you know, Drupal 8, or you're out, you know, choose something different entirely. So I think that the fear that I was worried about at the beginning is something that didn't have anything to do with us, and it hasn't come to pass. So,
do you have any surprises? You know, did someone anything crazy happen since you announced it?
I don't know if there's anything crazy that's happened, but the thing that I'm most excited about is the fact that Backdrop's growing developer community, it has not had very much overlap with the Drupal community. Like, the people who are turning into our core developers were not core developers from Drupal. They were contrib developers that feel that they weren't necessarily needed in the Drupal community, so they never really got involved. But when they come to Backdrop, they're like, wow, I can make a big difference, and you guys really appreciate what I'm doing, and I'm just going to jump right in. And so it's been kind of creating another community, and it's full of all these people that we knew and loved from the Drupal community, but maybe just weren't very involved. And so it's kind of like a birth of new developers at a different level of contribution, rather than taking anyone away from Drupal. So that's been, I think, the most exciting thing to see for me.
So now that Drupal 8 is out and the product that you were afraid of now is in the public alongside Backdrop, have you found that anything has changed?
I don't necessarily think anything has changed. I think that the biggest thing is that a year and a half ago, or 2.5 years ago, when we announced that we were going to do this, a lot of people didn't understand why. Like, they hadn't looked at Drupal 8. They didn't understand the scope of change. They didn't get why Backdrop was even being discussed. And now that people have taken a look at it, even if they don't agree with what they're doing, they understand where we're coming from. So I think that's the biggest change, is kind of a growing sense of understanding from the larger community.
Yeah, it took a little while for us, for sure. And I think that the same thing is happening on the Drupal side, where rather than pointing at each other, and that this, we were guilty of this one with that manifesto, is it was ill conceived that we were, that we're, there was some finger pointing and then like shouting the word wrong. and that's still happening in both directions, just a tiny, tiny bit, but really it's now vastly dwarfed by just an understanding that it's not wrong. It's just different, that there is a serious underlying philosophical difference between our two projects, that Backdrop is focused more on maintaining the code we have and maintaining compatibility, because that lowers the cost of ownership, or we believe that it will. And Drupal saying we can make our code better and better and better and just keep changing it all the time. And the cost of that change will be mitigated by the benefits of the new code, basically. So that's kind of the two different schools of thought there, that Drupal's thinking that by just rewriting everything or following latest trends or best practices of the time, that will make it so that your website will be more powerful and more flexible than if you iterated based upon the same architecture, which is what we're doing. So we're still delivering the same features in a way, but architecturally the underlying way that we're going about it is different.
It's also been interesting to watch how the two projects will come to the same problem and will adopt slightly different solutions because of our underlying principles. So
do you have any examples of that? Because that is pretty interesting. Anything that you can think of off the top of your head?
I mean, the most obvious example is the way that each project has handled configuration management. Uh-huh. Where we just tried to make Drupal 7 config capable, right? Where they're like, if we had to think about how to solve this problem, in line with the rest of what's going on in Drupal 8, how would we do it? And we both ended up with config management because it's a feature that everybody really wants. But how we arrived at it and how it actually works is fundamentally different in the two projects. Like, we chose YAML, or Drupal 8 chose YAML for the format of their files, and Backdrop chose JSON. And Backdrop just reads all of those files directly off disk every time it needs a value, and Drupal 8 has to have a cache that it accesses where it can get them all out of the database. And there's just like a bunch of little tiny differences, and it's like, well, we just need to figure out how to get it done as fast as we can and make it as easy to understand for our current developers and make it architecturally simple. Whereas Drupal 8 was like, well, no, we can think about, like, take a step back. We want all these files to match everything else in the system. Like, there was just a kind of a different mm-hmm. perspective and a different conclusions that were reached because of that. But at the end, we both got a feature that solves the same need.
So what is the audience of Backdrop? What's kind of the goal here, for as far as developers to be working on it and projects to be put on Backdrop?
So, I mean, in our mission statement, we specifically state that our intended owners of these sites are small, medium-sized businesses and nonprofits. And we generally chose those people because they usually have smaller budgets, right, as opposed to Drupal 8, which is now geared specifically for the enterprise, and they have a really big budget. So we're like, if we can just say we don't care about the enterprise, we're going to build a tool for, Drupal's traditional audience, that helps us kind of narrow our focus in one way. In terms of our developers, I mean, right now, this is a fork of a system that is very similar to Drupal 7. We're trying to keep it as compatible as possible to Drupal 7 so that all of the developers that are already familiar with Drupal 7 will feel comfortable in Backdrop. So that's our short-term audience. But we do realize that Drupal 7 has a limited life cycle, and at some point everybody will either have chosen to move on to Drupal 8 or move off to whatever else there is they're going to do. And at that point, we need to kind of say, okay, we're taking this software. We already know Drupal 7 is really complicated and cumbersome and hard for people to learn. Let's change that audience to the traditional PHP developer and try and make it less complicated, easier to understand, and move that kind of down towards the average WordPress developer who knows some PHP and was able to get this site up. So we're trying to kind of continue to shift downstream, more smaller sites rather than the enterprise.
So why would someone choose Backdrop over Drupal 8, you know, if they're running a small to medium size? And I mean, assume that this is a new site as opposed to a D7 upgrade.
Yeah. Well, so it really, the question is who's choosing, first question. Yeah. If it's a developer who's making that decision, I would recommend they both, you know, look at both sets of code and say, what do you want to work on if you're going to be writing code in the future? There is a school of people who really want what Drupal 8 has to offer. And if they look at that code and go, oh, thank goodness, I've always wanted Drupal to do this, that's where they're going to be happy in the future. But there are a huge amount of people who look at the code in Drupal 8 and go, what? I don't understand any of this. You know, everything I've learned, like all of the code I've learned is for Drupal, and this doesn't make any sense anymore. And if they open Backdrop and look at the code in there, it will make a lot of sense to them because it's the code they've always seen before. So I would say, like, if you're a developer, you're going to have a tendency to want to choose one over the other. And another person who's making that decision might not be a developer, right? It might be the website owner. And that person will need to think about who is their team, like who's going to support them in owning that website. They'll obviously want to consult with that team, but if it's, you know, I can hire whoever I want, that's a very different thing than, oh, I have this guy who works in our IT department and he's going to need to figure it out and deal with it. And those people might have different choices. You know, if you can hire an army of computer science engineers, then that's one thing. But if you just have this one guy who's got to figure it out, you might want to do something that's going to be easier to learn. And then also you should think about what your budget is, right? If you need to have the website done tomorrow, that might be a very different thing in terms of how long it'll take you to port modules from Drupal 7 to either Drupal 8 or Backdrop. And if you can, you know, invest a lot of money in making that happen, that'll also change your opinion on which software you should use.
Cool. So why would we choose it over WordPress if I have a new site?
So this is kind of the same, like, Drupal versus WordPress discussion. There's not much different in the land of Backdrop. Yeah. I like to think of using a website with a use case. WordPress is really good at being a blog and letting you create pages, and it has a really slick user interface. But when you start to have complex relational data, like one piece of content that needs to reference another, or a whole bunch of individual fields that need to be displayed in different ways in different places, Drupal is really, really good at that. So is Backdrop. WordPress, not so much. And you've got to start adding a lot to your themes to get them to look right. And you've got to start adding a bunch of architecture under the hood to make it function the way you want. And it starts to get hard to turn WordPress into that tool that you're trying to use. But that's the thing that Drupal and Backdrop are fantastic at. So if you've got to choose, it's again, who are the people on your team, right? Who's your developer? Do they know WordPress or not? Who are the people who have to use the software? Can you train your content editors to use Drupal or Backdrop? And we're trying to kind of help in all of these areas as well, right? Where it's like, we know content editing has gotten a lot better in Drupal 8. We're making it better in Backdrop as well. But we do have to compete with WordPress, I think, a lot more seriously than Drupal 8 will have to in the future. And so long term, we're still focused on making the user experience better in Backdrop, making it easier to learn in Backdrop, so that we can win more of those Backdrop versus Drupal or Backdrop versus WordPress decisions.
We're talking with Jen Lampton and Nate Haug, forkers of Backdrop. They're celebrating 1 year of Backdrop's release, and we'll hear all about that year and the plans for the future coming up right after this.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, lead developer and lead trainer Joe Schindelar from Drupalize Me.
Hello, Matt Cleave.
Have you been snowboarding lately?
A little bit. Not as much as I would like. The snow here is not as awesome as it could be. But I'm taking every chance I get.
You have plenty of cold.
It's true. We have plenty of cold.
What's going on at Drupal Eyes Me?
I don't know. We're getting ready for our big annual team retreat next week and setting up a schedule for all the things that we need to talk about. Making plans for the rest of the year, which I suppose is going to mean a lot of talking about the curriculum that we're creating for Drupal 8 and what we've got in the pipeline, trying to set schedules for when we think we'll be able to get things released and all that kind of stuff.
What's the next top secret thing you're working on?
I don't even know if it's a secret, but right now the things that we're actively working on are creating content for theming, which is well underway. It's kind of in like the copy editing, fact checking phase at the moment. And we're starting on some work to create a series of videos or tutorials about the new Migrate module and doing a Drupal 6 or Drupal 7 to Drupal 8 migration and all of the pieces that are involved with that. And that's kind of in the early planning phases at the moment.
I like that you're fact checking. I on a podcast can just say whatever the heck I want. You guys should probably do it.
Well, I sometimes say whatever I want too, and then I usually get called out on it and I have to go back and re-record the video, which is a lot of work. So it's generally better to make sure that you're at least close to right the first time.
So people should check that out. You got Drupal 8 content already on the site and more coming.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a ton of Drupal 8 content on the site already, especially for people that are interested in learning kind of the basics of Drupal 8 module development and configuration management. Those were sort of the things that our members said were the most interesting to them to learn right away. So we tried really hard to get those things done. And now we're working on theming, and we'll have a ton of theming content over the next couple of months.
So wait. You said something about your members telling you what they wanted to hear. So it's like a democracy? How does that work?
A little bit. We've done a couple of surveys over the last year or so of both our members and just kind of the general Drupal public about the topics that are they're most interested in learning. So we did, the surveys were essentially asked the question, like, of these topics, and we listed maybe a dozen of them, put them in order that you think you would want to learn them. And so we've been using that to guide our thinking about, well, okay, people made it fairly clear that they wanted to see configuration management and theming content right away. So let's do our best to get that content created as quickly as we can. We also have a suggestion box on our site where people can come and enter in suggestions or vote on existing suggestions. And so we keep an eye on that.
Where is this website with all this awesome Drupal training?
The website is at www.drupalize.me.
All right. Welcome back to the Lullabot podcast. We're here with Quick Sketch and Jen Lampton. You notice how I didn't say your last name there. I just said your handle to kind of be
pick that up.
Yeah. It's Haug. Everybody. His name is Nate Haug. And yeah. And we're talking about Backdrop versus Drupal versus WordPress. And it's been 1 year in Backdrop. Super exciting.
I love talking with Nate. Nate's my bunk buddy when we go to Lullabot events.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
When you're not my bunk buddy, Mike.
Well, I ditched you for Mark Drummond.
Yeah. Well, so okay.
Sorry.
Front-ender's got a front end.
Especially when Nate comes in late and I like attack him in the middle of the night. That's super fun. All right. And to be clear, I guess we're talking Backdrop. Backdrop isn't a Lullabot project, right, Nate?
No, but there are some Lullabots that have been involved.
Yeah. Very involved.
Jared Bittner has built his VRsites.com. Jared's really into virtual reality and the future of that. And he built a community website for people that are interested in VR at VRsites.com. And Wes, our front end wizard, is also done a lot of amazing work in Backdrop and in 1.3. He's actually got a couple of design enhancements, responsive tabs. We've got a really great implementation that he created that collapses down as you run out of screen space. And rather than being breakpoint driven, it's all width driven. So it's like as soon as the thing runs out of space, then it starts basically collapsing down iteratively until it's like, oh, I should switch to the mobile version, which I think is really kind of the best way to implement things that are responsive isn't based on, you know, window size, but based on like this thing has so much room available, so therefore I'm going to shrink down, basically. So anyway, we've had a lot of great contributions from Lullabots, and there's a couple of articles too. John Hanna wrote up an article detailing his experience with Backdrop, and I know that there's others. Anyway, it's not a Lullabot project, but there's been a lot of individual participations in the Backdrop project through Lullabot.
That's because you sell it really well, Nate. Yeah.
That's good. Well, it's all about the passion. You have a lot of passion for it, which is super awesome.
So here we are. We're 1 year into a Backdrop release. Are we going to put a front-end framework in core?
Wow, we just jumped right to that. Well, well, I would suggest anybody that's listening. I listened to the last podcast, and it was excellent. Drupal is currently considering, well... Yeah, just listen to the last podcast. There's a bunch
complicated.
But yeah, one of the things about that kept coming up in that last podcast was one of your interviewees, the guy from Chapter 3. You can remind me who that was.
Drew Bowles. Yeah.
Kept bringing up the fact that he's like, well, if we do this, it's going to be an enormous amount of work, like a complete rewriting. And the entire time I was listening to it, I was like Drupal 8. And so I thought that was a great example of the differences between the way that Backdrop works and the way that Drupal works, that for Drupal, like rewriting the entire front end during a release is not at all out of the question. Is it instead more like that's a thing that is likely to happen, even some of the crazier ideas like requiring Node.js, like those sorts of things are all on the table in the Drupal world. Well, and in the Backdrop world, if we were to look at that, we would go, I don't think so. Pretty quickly.
Just to clarify, they're on the table. Like, there's going to be no API, breaking API changes for D8, but as far as breaking API changes for Drupal 9, yes, definitely. And, there could be some type of framework in maybe, 8.1 or 8.2, but nothing that would remove Twig or break anything. So I hear.
Yep. And that's true. And we run things similarly in Backdrop land. We have minor releases. They're a bit more frequent. Drupal 8.1, we haven't yet seen how that release will go. But Backdrop has already had four releases, 1.0 through 1.3. And a Backdrop release comes out every 4 months on the 15th of that, of those 4 month periods like clockwork. And so far that has been just tremendously beneficial. Like, everybody loves it in our core community. Like, the disappointment of if your feature didn't get in is really mitigated by it, and it also helps minimize kind of the swings of development. Like, the everybody, this does still happen, everybody does a lot of development like a couple of weeks before the release, but then if something doesn't get in, they're like not that disappointed, and then they can finish it up and then it'll be in the next one.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
You have regularly timed releases that would allow that, right? It's not like you're just releasing when you feel like it.
Right. Yeah, it's actually scheduled January 15th, right. May 15th, and September 15th. So that's the way that those releases go. And if we don't have something ready, which is what happened actually in 1.0, we thought that we were going to do CK Editor because I have a passion for CK Editor, but we didn't finish it in time, and so it got moved to the next release, and that was fine.
Actually, we thought we were going to put it in 1.1, but it didn't come until 1.2.
Ah, yes, that's the way it went. So, yeah, we knew it wasn't going to be in 1.0, the fact that it got moved once wasn't really a big deal, and that's the way we'd like to operate on everything, where instead of holding up the release to fit in one more feature, we just skip the feature and it goes into the next one, which is a much more sane way of working.
Cool. So now that you're 1 year old, what mistakes have you made and what have you done differently? I mean, talk about from a technical standpoint and then from a community standpoint.
Well, this one isn't I'll just say that we've had a particular difficulty in the backdrop world from a technical standpoint, that we've had this large focus on compatibility, making it easy for people to port modules from Drupal 7 to backdrop. That whole process can take a couple of hours usually. Some modules it's only a couple of minutes actually, but a couple of hours is pretty typical in a really complicated module, like a week or so. Like a really substantial port would take that long. Mm-hmm. But one area that we've had trouble is the modules that depend on C tools plugins in particular. In that, in backdrop land, we implemented all of C tools. Every single bit of C tools is in core. Between the dialogue system. There's a bunch of mathematical engines, a bunch of different parts of C tools are all in core, except for probably the biggest thing that C tools is known for, which is plugins. And converting modules from using plugins into backdrop can be a little bit confusing for people. And there's a reason why we didn't put in the plugin system. It's primarily because the plugin system has a huge amount of overlap with the way that Drupal has traditionally worked, which is fundamentally through info hooks. When you need a list of something, like a list of blocks, for example, we have hook block info, and that gets you the list of all blocks that are in the system. And if we were to adopt the plugin system, a plugin in the Drupal 8 sense and in the C tool sense kind of did three things. It self-registered itself so that the file that contained the plugin also contained information about that plugin. Like in the case of a block in C tools, they had content types, which is very poorly named, but it was the C tools equivalent of a block. And that at the top of the file, they had an array of info that defined the admin title of the block and what its requirements were and things like that. And in Drupal 8, they have something similar, that they have plugins and they have annotations at the top that also self-define the plugin, what its name is, what its requirements are, and things like that. And we acknowledged that if we put CTools plugins or any kind of plugins into core, that basically means that we would need to largely do a rewrite or removal of all info hooks in all of core and move them all into plugins, which would ultimately result in a major refactoring of a huge amount of code.
therefore creating D8.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we were in this situation where it's like the concept of plugins and the concept of info hooks have such a tremendous amount of overlap that we chose the one that was more, that was dominant. And in Drupal 7 land, that's info hooks. Mm-hmm. But there were still a number of modules that had adopted CTools plugins. And so when you're moving a module from Drupal 7 CTools land into backdrop, you kind of have to unpluginize stuff. You need to take whatever was in those arrays at the top of your files, move them into an info hook. Because we don't have plugins. It's all still info hook based in the spirit of maintaining the maximum amount of compatibility. So we're trying to tell contrib developers that there shouldn't be two ways of doing things, especially with so much overlap, that we're focused on doing things the dominant fashion of Drupal 7. So that's I wouldn't even call that a mistake. It's just a point of difficulty for backdrop developers that we are so big on this compatibility, but in order to maintain the compatibility, we had to make a compromise there that CTools plugins really kind of were the loser in terms of maintaining the maximum amount of compatibility.
Now, forgive my misunderstanding here and my lack of knowledge in the backdrop world, but I thought you had a layout manager type thing that was similar to or based on panels.
Yes. Yeah, we do.
And how did you strip CTools plugins out? Because that's kind of how panels works, right? When you're developing for panels, I mean, the only reason I ever created a content type plugin was because I wanted the block in panels. And you know, and then access plugins and other types of plugins to do things within panels. So when you strip that out, you rewrote a bunch of info hooks.
Well, the big thing is that the reason those things had to exist for panels was because blocks were dumb. And so the only way you could get stuff like context to work in your blocks was to make a new block type that was aware of context. So what we did is we just fixed blocks. So if you want a custom content type as it was in panels land, now you can just use a block for that. So we've kind of solved the underlying issue there. And all of the other kinds of plugins that CTools provided that was necessary for panels, they all now have info hooks. So if you want an access callback, you can do it that way. So just how the contrib community would have to rewrite a contrib module to not use plugins, that's already been done in core. And so what's left of panels is the underlying concepts, things like access and layouts and all that stuff is already there, but it's all a little different, and it's got a completely new user interface on it. So layouts is now not a plugin for CTools anymore that adds a layout that panels can use. It's now a top-level concept that, you know, it's equivalent to a module or a theme that you can drop in a set of layouts, and that includes your grid system and where all of your stuff goes and all of that. But then all of the little tinier bits have just been placed in core in the same way. So, you don't need plugins for panels. That just happened to be the way it was written in Drupal 7. And so we kind of undid the pluginizing and made it all work for Backdrop at a higher level.
Gotcha. So yeah. what was the biggest mistake from the community standpoint?
Well, we touched on this a little bit earlier, that the announcement of Backdrop kind of came out before we were really ready to fully explain it.
Gotcha.
And that and internally it took us longer than it should have to come around to the idea that we had differences of opinion and differences in philosophy, and that's where the friction was coming from. Initially we were just like, you know, this is wrong and this is going incorrectly. But then we kind of just figured out, oh, we just have different ideas, different underlying philosophies.
Cool.
How many contrib projects are there now for the Backdrop?
So I looked this morning and we have, I think, 196 of them,
you
which
need
is
four
pretty
more,
good.
Huh?
Yeah, we're approaching the big 200. Which I think is pretty substantial considering we've only been out for a year. And of that year, I'm not even sure there were that many people that were using Backdrop before we had that rich text editor in core. So I think, you know, there were a couple of us who were using it early on just because we wanted to support it. But I think until it had that rich text editor, it wasn't something that was going to be super attractive to the majority. And in the last few months, we've had so many people just creating contrib projects, showing up in the contrib repository on GitHub, where it's like, there's another one every week. We do a status meeting on what's going on in the world of Backdrop, and we have this announcement. We're like, oh, we've got four new modules this week. We've got, you know, a new contrib developer who wants to join the group. And I think that the growth, especially in the last few months, has been really impressive.
And explain where all these are stored. So on Drupal, you know, Drupal.org has the repository, has the tracker and all that stuff. So with Backdrop, it's all on GitHub, but are they in individual repositories and then somehow brought together?
So what we've done is we've created a group, which is basically an organization on GitHub, that anybody who wants to contribute their code will submit an application to join the group, and then they can commit directly into that group repository. And that does a couple of good things. Number one, it enables us to do security audits and have commit control over those projects. So if somebody accidentally commits something that perhaps would expose users to a vulnerability, somebody else from the community has the power to fix it, which I think is the most important thing. But it also enables us to do things like pull in all of the projects from that group to the backdropcms.org website and build listings of them, just like we have seen on Drupal.org, where there's a central place where you can go and search and find things. GitHub is not great for letting you find exactly what it is you're looking for. So we're kind of building a better user interface on top of that for people who aren't already GitHub savvy.
I'm going to assume that most of the quick sketch modules that we all know and love are there. Flag,
yeah,
five star.
Most of them, but bizarrely, I didn't port hardly any of them. like a web form module has been ported and flag module has been ported. And I don't think 5-star has been ported yet, but I mean, those are, you know, I only worked on them a long time ago, but Webform, you know, I'm still actively maintaining over in Drupal land as well. And it was odd that I didn't do the port for Backdrop, primarily because somebody else needed it sooner. And so they did the port. And I've been focused a lot on the infrastructure needs of Backdrop. Like I did the port of like project module, for example. That makes it so that, like Jen was saying, like if you make a release on GitHub, it uses GitHub's webhook system to send information over to backdropcms.org to create the corresponding project release nodes, for example.
Cool.
And so I've been stuck on, maybe not stuck, but I've been focused on doing infrastructure tests to let the overall project grow, and the contrib projects have largely been handled by other contrib authors, which has been fantastic.
So what is Backdrop in need of right now? What's the biggest blocker to greater adoption?
I think we need two things. Number one, we need to have more people using Backdrop and a way for other people to know that people are using Backdrop. So one of the things we'd like to do is set up a showcase very similar to Drupal's showcase where people can see, oh, look, here are websites that are running Backdrop. Because that's, I think, something that's really intimidating as a site owner, where you're like, I want to use this thing, but I don't really know if anyone else has done it successfully. It feels like a risk. So having that showcase up where people can see, oh, here's sites that are using it, and you know, these are the things that they problems they've solved with it, I think would be really great. And then we also need more people, not just owning those websites, but working on the project. Obviously, we've got a whole bunch of people creating contrib modules, but I think that you know, in order for this to be successful long term, it needs to grow beyond what it is now. We're guessing that probably the next 2 years is going to be, you know, make it or break it time for Backdrop. Right now, everybody's kind of looking at Drupal 8 and they're looking at Backdrop and they're humming and hawing and they're making lists of what do I need, what does this have? But there aren't a lot of people who have actually just jumped on board and said, let's going to do it. Let's figure it out and talk about it. And so right now, I think as soon as we have more people using it, then we'll get more people using it. As soon as we have more developers working on it, we'll get more developers working on it. But it is very much that chicken and egg situation where in the very beginning, there's a whole bunch of people who are just kind of thinking about it. And that's fair. I mean, this is a big thing. Nobody really knows for sure beforehand. You can't see the future. You don't know what decision to make. You want to make that decision carefully. And we have been telling people for the last year, like, if you aren't sure, just wait and see. Drupal 7 is a solid proven product. If you have a Drupal 7 site and you're not in a hurry to make any changes, just wait it out and see what happens. And so that's what the situation we're in right now, where we've got a bunch of people that are using it. We need a bunch more, but they're all just waiting to see what happens. So we'll see. I think, if we can get more people both talking about the fact that they are using it, which we're going to try and help on our own website, and then contributing back, that's going to be our ticket to success.
The community is really kind of the big thing that's touted as a huge benefit in the Drupal world. So yes. I have a question. That might sound a little mean, but as the and I don't intend it to be that way, as the code continues to deviate from Drupal, one thing you're missing is the number of eyes on code and the Drupal security team. Is that a concern to you?
So right now the code is pretty similar. And I don't know if you had something you wanted to say, but what I was going to say is that we're not really missing the Drupal security team. We've been working pretty closely with them with all of the security releases that have come out for Drupal in the latest while. We've got eyes on all of everything that's going on over there as well. And there has been a lot of great collaboration between the two projects, making sure that security issues and security releases come out at the same time for both of them. And so far, we're so similar with Drupal 7 that I don't think, I mean, I think that there's a much bigger risk. Well, I don't know. I was just going to say that we've got a lot of eyes on Backdrop because there are a lot of eyes on Drupal 7. So the code overlap there is so significant that it hasn't been an issue for us yet. long-term, we do have our own kind of budding security team, people who are interested in working on Backdrop security, but maybe not Drupal, and we will continue to grow that as the project grows as well.
So let's talk about Backdrop's governance model, because I found this super exciting and interesting. How does it work? How is it different than Drupal's?
Drupal, as you probably know, is set up as a basically a benevolent dictatorship for life is the common term for it, BDFL, where basically, as far as the source of authority goes, Dries, the founder of the project, holds the ultimate authority in pretty much everything. And it's definitely a very centralized model where conflict resolution is the primarily like it comes to him, like when people can't figure stuff out, or if there's a tussle in the community, then the escalation mechanism is always, you know, what does Dries say? What does Dries say? An interesting way about the way that the Drupal project is run, though, is that Dries very rarely actually makes decisions on things. Instead, he waits for the community to escalate something to say, like, we explicitly need a decision here because we are stuck. And other than that, the way decisions are primarily made is just through it's advertised as consensus, but it's really like whoever can shout down the other people most effectively, then that's kind of the way the project goes. That's not quite fair, but
it's most motivated on any given issue, and that motivation can be driven by time, like whoever's got the most time to talk about it. It can be driven by money, like if you are hired to solve a particular issue, and there are a whole bunch of other people in those issue queues who maybe just don't come back to that issue, and they don't have a counter argument, and then all of the loudest voices in there end up reaching consensus. But that doesn't mean it's a consensus for the whole community. It's a consensus of the people who are most motivated to solve that problem.
So how is that different? Like, how does Backdrop work?
So with Backdrop, we have a project management committee, and this is a model that we've adopted from Apache. They have a whole bunch of projects that all use this, where the committee is responsible for conflict resolution primarily. So if there is an argument in an issue queue with a couple of people saying, this is how we shall solve this problem, maybe we shouldn't solve it, maybe we should solve it a different way, at some point that issue can get escalated to the project management committee, and the project management committee will look at that issue and compare it to the principles of the project and say which one of these solutions, or you know, maybe not solving the problem, is best in line with the goals of the project and make that decision. And that project management committee is also empowered to change the philosophy of the project. So 10 years from now, what the internet needs might be, you know, very different from what its needs are today. And to have somebody to be able to publicly look at that list and say, you know, this is what we said about 10 years ago and it's not relevant and we're going to change it, we'll continue to enable that committee to make the right decisions on behalf of the whole project. So it's not just the people in the issue queue who have to make that decision. It's going to go up to a committee that's empowered to make a decision on behalf of the whole.
Yeah, I want to add that we also have a really strong emphasis on our project philosophy in the Backdrop world, which is not so great in the Drupal world, where Drupal's project philosophy can often be shifted or changed, and the way I kind of see it is normally the way policy is set is a series of blog posts by either Dries or other community members saying why they want to do a particular thing, and then they explain that, and then they discuss it, and kind of a kickoff is a series of blog posts and then a bunch of issues to actually discuss that blog post. And I know Larry Garfield has done this a lot in the past with his initiatives. Wim Lears, I know he did a bunch of stuff around making Drupal fast out of the box, and he pushed that initiative through a series of blog posts and then followed it up with a bunch of issues. And that seems to be the way the Drupal project direction is frequently created, is through like a series of blog posts explaining like this is our current philosophy and this is what we're trying to do. And then it kind of goes in that direction. What we try to do in Backdrop World is when we're considering a particular feature, the very first thing we should do is we should say, how does this line up with our project goals? And where we're trying to take this project. And we look at that over at our mission statement and our philosophy guidelines, and we say, you know, does this fit with Backdrop in the first place? And so hopefully what we can do by doing that period of evaluation is we can eliminate the effort that goes into working towards something that ultimately will just fizzle out and not be accepted. Because we try to let people know up front, like, whether or not something is appropriate for the project before they do a whole bunch of work on it. And that, in theory, should help us out with burnout management, that people aren't all bringing their own ideas of what they want the project to... Well, I mean, they are bringing their own ideas of what they want the project to be, but they're not going off on a tangent that isn't actually in line with the project itself. Or in the case of Drupal, like, where the community wants it to go, because it can be difficult for somebody to know what the consensus is going to bring to the table, that they could do a whole bunch of development, and then only after they'd done it would enough people come together and say, we're not interested in this, for them to know, oh, that work I did doesn't line up with Drupal. But you can't know that, because what lines up with Drupal is kind of a matter of opinion, that everybody brings it to the discussion, and then they talk about whether or not it's appropriate for Drupal based on kind of a loose idea of, you know, how they individually feel about where the project should head.
Okay, so Jen Lampton, where can somebody find you on Twitter?
At Jen Lampton.
That's too easy. So Jen, I have one final question for you.
Yes.
If I can find my right tab.
All right. The question is, the question is, where is Matt Cleave's correct tab?
It's the third one. It's the third one.
Yeah, you were too easy.
What is the one feature of Backdrop that you want people to know about?
Well, the big game changer for me is probably layouts. This is something that was part of Drupal 8's really original set of goals, was to come out with a new blocks and layout system, and it got cut because of all of the other stuff that happened in the Drupal 8 cycle that was deemed more important. So this is a big differentiator between Backdrop and Drupal 8. It's also, the layman's turn of what is layouts is panels and core. Panels is my favorite module back in Drupal 7, Drupal 6 days. So it shouldn't really be a surprise to anyone that I'm super excited about layouts and Backdrop. As I mentioned earlier, it also includes a bunch of fixes to the block system. And it's really new, so we haven't quite seen what everybody in Contrib is going to start doing with it yet. But there's a whole bunch of possibilities that I'm really curious to see where people take it. It enables a lot of stuff you weren't able to do with Drupal in the past. It's got a pretty slick user interface, and it's a really powerful new tool. So you need to know about layouts.
So, hey, I have a favorite feature of Backdrop when I'm messing around with it, and it's the search box within the admin menu. That thing is so logical. Like, I don't know why that doesn't exist in Drupal land.
It does, actually.
It
if
does?
You install admin menu, there is a particular branch that includes the search box. I use that on all my Drupal 7 sites, too. But yeah, that came from a usability study we did where people couldn't find anything in the administration section. And somebody, I don't even remember who it was now, was like, hey, you know how Apple has that search box where you do like a, you know, command space and you can type something and it'll show you where it is in the menu. And Sun was like, oh, I can write that up. And just threw it into admin menu. And I was just like, this is amazing. So yeah,
oh
that was
God.
Definitely something we wanted to include in Backdrop.
Yeah. I'm not sure it ever made it into an official release of admin menu though.
No.
And that's why nobody is aware of it. Cause the recommended release doesn't include that feature. You have to use the latest alpha or something like that. Of,
I think
of
it might even be, I don't even think it's in the latest. I think it's in some random off branch.
What the hell, Drupal?
In any case, it's in Backdrop. And one of the things we did in the latest release, our latest release, the 1.3 release, was a UX release.
Yeah.
And we reworked the structure of the administrative menu to make it specifically more friendly towards the admin menu search. We had a bunch of pages that just had the word list, for example, and we're like, well, rather than saying list, we should say like list blocks or list content or list users or list user accounts. basically making it so that the search would be more effective, because we want that search to be like a primary way of navigating the website. And in order to do that, like we worked through all of the, we actually went through all of the entire structure, and we're like, how can we make this make more sense as a standalone label for an item to make it more searchable? Which has been really pretty effective. It's just one of the things that we were focused on for 1.3.
Yeah, it really works pretty well. And for those that haven't tried Backdrop yet, basically it's just a text input to the top right, kind of next to where your user account and logout button are, is within the admin menu, and you start typing, and of course, you know, the drop-down menu automatically appears, and it'll show you different options and where they are located within the menu system, which is in it. It's really, really quick and fast, and it's honestly just a great, you know, user experience. So that's pretty awesome.
Nate Haug, your yes. quick sketch on Twitter. True?
Oh yes, quick sketch on quick sketch everywhere. Quicksketch.org on Twitter, on Apple.org, on backdropcms.org, in IRC, everywhere. GitHub. On GitHub, yes, of course.
Okay. And your mailman delivers mail to Quick Sketch. Okay,
if
maybe
we
not.
Just write Quick Sketch on the envelope, will it get to you?
No.
So Nate, what is the one feature of Backdrop that you want to tell people about?
Well, one of the things we added in the most recent release is kind of a subtle feature, but I think it's going to be a huge improvement for the user experience of everybody using Backdrop. And that's we solved this problem with so-called slow first-time page loads, where if you haven't visited your site, and this happens particularly on development and testing sites, if you haven't visited your site in like a couple hours or a day or something like that, the first time you hit your site, because you haven't set up cron jobs on your local site or your testing site or whatever, yep. the first page load takes like 20 seconds yep. because it builds the page, and then before it returns it runs cron, those cron jobs, and that is like, you know, indexing nodes and clearing out watchdog entries and all this stuff. And for some silly reason, that holds up the return of the page. It doesn't need to. And in Backdrop 1.3, we added background processing, and background processing is done for automated cron and anything that implements hook exit, that the page is generated, and as soon as the page finishes generating, it returns the page to the browser, closes the connection, and then continues processing that PHP in the background, so that automated cron job can no longer affect the load time of a page anymore, which is awesome. And then if you take that even one step further, once we've figured out like, oh wow, background processing is really powerful and really cool, we took a page out of Varnish 4's feature set, which is background fetch, and we added that to the page cache. And it makes it so that after the page cache has expired, let's say you have your page lifetime set to 5 minutes. In previous versions of Backdrop, after 5 minutes, what would happen is the first user after 5 minutes gets a slow page load. Let's say your page takes half a second to generate instead of, you know, 20 milliseconds. That first page view after 5 minutes is slow. But in Backdrop now, if you turn on background fetch, then after 5 minutes, what happens is that user gets served one more stale page, and then it enters background processing, regenerates the new fresh cache, and then updates the cache entry. And then the next user, after 5 minutes, gets the updated cache entry that was generated by the previous user. So basically, it makes it so that there's never a slow page load after the first cache hit, or after the first cache generation, because all subsequent cache generations are all done in the background.
Fascinating.
It's pretty awesome. Cool. And it should really make a serious impact for sites that don't get a lot of traffic or haven't set up automated cron, or for sites that have really heavy page builds for anonymous users and want to set a low cache lifetime. Since now that there's never a slow page load, like, it would behoove people to just set like a really low cache lifetime, like 1 minute, because they'll never have, their end users will never experience that slow page load after the first time it's generated.
So where can we try out Backdrop? Like how do you do it?
So the easiest way to give Backdrop a try is to go to backdropcms.org, and there's a big button on the homepage that will fire up a site for you on Pantheon. And so you can go there, you can give it a try, you can take it for a spin, you can build a website, and if you have a Pantheon account, it's really easy. It's just kind of a one-step process. If you don't have a Pantheon account, you don't want one, you can also download Backdrop and install it wherever you would normally install Drupal.
Cool.
Well, thanks, guys, for coming on, talking Backdrop.
Yay! Thanks so much for having us. It's great being on the Lullabot podcast again.
Yeah, it's been a while for you, hasn't it?